You're listening to Cards to the Moon, a podcast about trading cards from both a collector and investor perspective. We hope you'll stick around for the ride as we take a deep dive into the state of the hobby, share some hot takes, hopefully some useful advice and fun stories along the way. Hey guys, welcome back to Cards to the Moon. This is episode 201. My name is Clark from 5cardguys.com and 5cardguys on Instagram. Co-hosting with me as usual is Hyung of Integrity Sports Cards and John, who is Trade You at Recess. All right, off the top today, I actually wanted to talk about this last episode, but then the whole Shohei interpreter bombshell news dropped, so we ended up talking about that if you missed it on our Friday episode. Today, though, I want to finally discuss the other big controversy in the hobby, and I'm referring to the Victor Wembanyama Black Prism 1/1 card, which recently got a PSA 10. And the whole controversy began when the owners of the card, they shouted out Kurt's Card Care for helping achieve that perfect grade, presumably by using their product to help clean the card. Now, the question many are asking is whether the card should have been considered altered because of the chemicals or whatever they use to wipe it clean, or is it fair game to use cleaning products or Kurt's Card Care to make sure the card is given the best chance to be graded a PSA 10, right? So what do you guys think of this whole thing?
Dan, do we want to go down this?
And this could be a hobby headline segment. We might have a double hobby headline segment in this episode.
I'll say I'm in the camp of clean it. Like it's, I'm submitting it for grading. I'm not gonna submit a dirty card or like a card that's not prepped. Of course, obviously, there's concerns of like what's going on. I haven't done too much research on Kurt's Card Care, but like I've heard nothing but positive things. Yeah. Very happy customers, you know, and I side with the hobby on that side. I know there's a lot of old school heads that kind of think the opposite, but on this one, I think I'm more on that side just because, you know, if I'm sending a card to PSA and I'm checking it and it's not like there's, I guess, like dirt on it or whatever, I would expect to 100% clean it. Like it would be stupid for me not to. So I don't know what other logic you could kind of justify it, because that's the whole point of grading. You're trying to get the best grade possible, and that's a big part of it, right? So like I side on that side more so just because, yeah, it's always been around, to be honest, right? Mm-hmm. And I think maybe it was offside that he gave a plug in on PSA's ground. You don't want necessarily that going public, but other than that, I think it's fair game.
Okay, yeah, fair.
Yeah.
Johnny?
I feel like this conversation is like the sports card hobbies, not so, you know, like the biggest not so secret or whatever the saying is, because we all know. I mean, let's get real. We all know what the elephant in the room is. Like you can't restore a corner, you can't restore an edge, you can't bring back centering on a card that's off center. We all know what we're talking about here. It is the ability to polish the surface, right? That's been the, you know, I think people try to keep it hush hush, but at this point, everybody knows exactly what's happening. And that's probably the biggest controversy, is the fact that everybody has the ability, especially on Chromium product, to kind of manipulate the surface to make it better. And truthfully, I know old heads and purists are all about the original condition of the card. And for those, I get it, right? Those folks probably don't even grade their cards. They love it. Like the card as is, completely fine. That is like an absolute purist. But for the other haters out there, you know, let's be real. Like you act like a purist on this conversation, but when it's your card, you want Kurt's card care. You want those PSA 10s. You're going to do what you can to make it turn into a PSA 10, whatever it is, right? If I have to, like clean it off with a microfiber cloth a little bit more than usual, or whatever you want to do, put some substance on the thing. So I think for me, this is like a generally minor restorations is generally a pretty known and perfect practice when it comes to things like comic books and et cetera, et cetera. So I think this is like a tipping point in the sports card hobby, whether we're truly going to accept this now or not, right? And Neo Cards and Comics had, I didn't get to watch the episode, but I saw that he had an episode of where he calls out the grading companies, right? Either be black and white on this. Either you're for it or you're against it. Don't pretend it doesn't exist. It exists. Yeah. And are you for it? Are you going to address it or you're not, right? So I think I appreciate that because I think we're at the crossroads now, whether we're going to accept this or we're not going to accept it. And for me, I think I'm okay with it. If I'm being honest, like your sports card, when you rip open a pack and it happens to be dented or happens to have, you're excited. You get Otani out of five, or you get some crazy card and it's like poorly off centered or it's got a crazy scratch. That's just the most disappointing thing ever to see that, right? You're like, oh my gosh, like I was really excited about this. And now it's like probably a PSA 7. It's not the worst thing in the world. I'm still kind of excited about it, but right. So even as a collector, like cards in theory coming out of a pack should be a 10 out of 10 mint condition. The whole concept of it not being 10 out of 10 is because you didn't handle it well. You flick the cards at a wall when you're a kid, you're playing with the cards. They became worse and worse in condition. That's the whole point. It's not a 10 straight out of a pack, right? So I think, I think minor restorations and things that help you achieve, bring back that 10 or perfect grade. I don't know. I'm for it, to be honest.
Yeah. I don't know if people are going to really hate this podcast because I'm siding with you guys as well, right? But at the end of the day, like, isn't this like really the grader's fault? You know what I mean? Like the whole, not graders, but like, you know, what grading has become, right? Where the value of these modern cards are, you know, a huge difference with these big boy cards, whether it's a PSA 10 or a PSA 9, right? And otherwise, who cares? You know what I mean? But because it's so lucrative, people are going to...
Yeah, what do you expect?
exactly, true. Right? So that's why I also agree with what you said, John. Like, you know, until there are like rules that the hobby just we just accept all of a sudden, you know, then fine, so be it, right? But right now it's you know, no one wants to really talk about it, and it's just kind of generally accepted. But you know, I do think we're at a crossroads where we're gonna have to decide. And I was actually listening to another. We'll talk about Cage the lawyer. He's been releasing a lot of interesting YouTube videos, actually very insightful. But one of his videos that he released was on this topic, and he kind of equated to the steroid era, you know, like in baseball, like pretty much everyone was doing it, or a lot more people were doing it than you probably think otherwise. But if it wasn't a definitive rule, then at the time, was it wrong? You know, and you know, it's obviously it's a hot debate still, but you know, he was talking about Barry Bonds, who was an all-star before he started allegedly using, right? With his 40-40 campaigns pre. And then, you know, he sees guys like Sosa and McGuire just hitting bombs. And what's he going to do? Just kind of stay on the sidelines and not do anything, right? So there's this kind of, I don't know if it's a perfect correlation, but I see where he's going with that kind of comparison where there's no rule stated on these things, you know, and people are just up in arms about like, oh, this is my opinion is the right one, you know, and you know, there are two sides to everything. And I think it's worth a discussion and a conversation to see what we think of it. Right. And yeah, at the end of the day, like even with vintage cards, you know, I guess you could make the argument like is trimming, like we all accept trimming as a no-no, right? That's an altered
card. I would say that's altered,
right?
For sure. Yep.
But then back then, I'm sure the conversation's like, you know, it's like, oh, but the manufacturer like is so off-centered. Is that my fault? Like, I just want to make it more centered looking. So I'm going to trim this card. It's kind of like, you know, having that dialogue. But now we just accept like, yeah, everyone for the most part is like, no, if it's trimmed, I don't want it because it's altered in a significant way. Maybe we have to have that kind of dialogue when it comes to surface issue of chromium cards, most, you know, of modern cards, right? Mm-hmm. That's, I think that's where we're at now. Or at the end of the day, it's still one of one. I don't know what the big deal is with this. You know, it's still scarce. Like, this is a problem when the scarcity is in the subjectiveness of the grade, of the PSA 10 number grades out there. You know, if it's a gold prism out of 10, who cares? You know, we always say, like, you know, we want to slab more for the authenticity of the card. And who cares about the grade at the end of the day if it's already that scarce, like if it's number to 5 or number to 10 or super fractor,
right?
Maybe if you want to be more of a purist, maybe those are the cards you go after, you know, the low serial number, and not the low pop PSA 10 cards that, you know, that are worth a lot right now. All right.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
That's off the top, actually. It's not our hobby headline segment, but I'm sure we can go much deeper if we wanted to. But let's move on to the actual hobby headlines today. Okay, so Hyung and I talked about this last week when Kevin O'Leary, aka Mr. Wonderful, got into the hobby game when he broke a box of 2018 National Treasures basketball with high-end collector Shine. Now, O'Leary has since posted on his Instagram how he thinks sports cards can be a legitimate alternative asset class. And I think in one of his posts, he suggests a 5% weighting of your portfolio. So he looks like he's pretty all like going into this hobby space for real. On the other side of things, I was just mentioning in the off the top segment, Cage the Lawyer, he came out with a couple of YouTube videos really questioning where we are as a hobby. And one of the videos was titled, "Why I'm Selling My Cards." And he does make some good points, and we'll talk about them in this segment. And one of them is actually that even if the hobby grows 10x, which is what Michael Rubin has been announcing, right, and trying to do with Fanatics' involvement in the hobby, even if it grows 10x, Cage the Lawyer's point, or one of his points, is that don't expect more people coming into the hobby means your personal collection of cards will be worth more with the increased demand. Right. So he says, rather, the money that does come into the hobby, especially from new collectors, will likely go to breakers, you know, because all of those new collectors are more likely to be chasing, you know, the big hits and the bounties that we're hearing a lot about these days. So for you guys, where do you stand? You know, what's the state of the hobby right now, in your opinion?
I don't think Cage is wrong. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that it's different perspectives that you're seeing it at. So when Kevin O'Leary comes in, he's looking at it as a sustainable marketplace, a future longevity in the marketplace. He's looking at a opportunistic standpoint, a perspective. Sure. Whereas I think Cage is looking at it from kind of like a microeconomics standpoint. I think it goes with crypto, stocks. You invest in anything, really, and you don't know what you're investing in, and you expect returns, I think you're going to be disappointed. But I do believe, I side with Kevin O'Leary on this, where I see it as an opportunity rather than kind of, of course, there's going to be stupid investments within the hobby, right? I would stay far away from. But yeah, like I think there are great opportunities as well. I think there are pieces that are great investment opportunities, for the future. And I still think there are buying opportunities on, you know, multiple players and different forms of cards and multiple players. Right. And we look at the Mickey Mantles and stuff like that. And you have a history of kind of like a marketplace. And we said in the 90s that we were going to get rich off junk wax era. But at the time, Mickey Mantle, I remember, and Beckett, was the 52 Tops was the most expensive card there. And everybody would say that card's going to be $1 million one day, you know. And sure enough, you know, we went through all the ups and downs of the hobby. But still, if somebody invested whatever they did, $5,000 back in the days in it, they would have done pretty well. And I see it the same way. You make the right investment today and you love sports. And it's a way of, you know, cheering on your favorite athletes, right? Like you have it in Vegas where you're betting on the team to win, and there's no really betting on a player. And this is kind of like that, I guess, way you could invest in sports, particularly a player that you're interested in or you believe in his talent. So to me, I think it's a valid point in terms of where Kevin O'Leary is taking it from as opposed to Cage, because Cage is looking at it from, you know, a collector slash hobbyist perspective. And yeah, he's absolutely right. Most of your collections, probably no one's going to buy him, right? And no, I don't think any, I expected that our collections were going to 10X. I think good buys will eventually 10X if they're good investments, like everything else, right? So I think it's just two different perspectives. I don't think both are wrong. I think it's where you see it from. Where in the hobby do you side more in terms of what you view the hobby as? And that's why even I always say I like to focus on the positivity of the hobby, because of course there's the negative aspects. We could pick them all out, but it's really not going to do any justice. So for me, I don't even bother with stuff like, well, what happens in this? Breakers are getting this. This, of course, there's a lot of issues that arise. And, you know, as someone who looks at it from an opportunity standpoint, these are the problems that need to be addressed. And good business people come into the marketplace to fulfill these, you know, problems with logical solutions, right? And that's all Kevin O'Leary is looking at it from, because he comes from a, you know, totally different background, unbiased. He's a watch collector. So if I say, okay, if there's a marketplace that's kind of similar to high-end card collecting, it might be watches, right? If there's one aspect of somebody that might spend $1,000 on a watch, a Gucci watch, right? It's not, Gucci is just a brand, but that thing's probably going to $100 if you try reselling it. But you buy AP in the right time for $60,000, and you know now it's worth $150,000-$200,000. Like, no one's gonna say that's a stupid investment. Of course, it was a great investment, right? And that's the way Kevin O'Leary sees it, because he's looking at the diamonds, the APs, the Rolexes. You know, he's not looking at the Gucci watches. You know, of what some hobbyists look at, like set collecting or whatever. Of course, there's no demand. It's a supply demand thing, right? Rarity versus demand. And sports is the driving influence. So I think just based on that, like I get where Kevin O'Leary is coming a lot more than Cage, but I'm not saying I like what Cage is doing. He puts out good content there. I think he's positive for the hobby in general. So it's not to say that he's right or wrong, but that's what I would kind of counter with. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Good points.
Yeah. You can certainly, they're not technically two sides. They are the two different sets of the spectrum, if we want to call it that. And, you know, like going back to O'Leary and Shine, I wouldn't put it past them that, like, they made those videos look as if, you know, Shine happened to be wherever he is, and he like ran into Kevin O'Leary, and he's like, "Hey, I'm breaking boxes. Might as well break with me here. Let me introduce you to sports cards." And then the next time they're all, you know, happen to be on the plane together, and they release another video, Instagram Live, and now, you know, Kevin O'Leary's talking about how he's convinced and all that stuff. I wouldn't put it past them that this is like, you know, smart of them to maybe do a little bit of marketing for something that they're getting into together, you know, like it's a good, you know, I don't want this to come out thinking that I think they're shady or something like that. It's smart. You guys, they're in big business. You don't just release live videos for no reason. There's probably some legitimate purpose behind their videos. So That's one thing I wanted to mention. I don't feel like they're just fluke videos. I think they could have easily maybe invested in a sports car company together, and they want to, boost some of the marketing for whatever they needed to do. I wouldn't put it past them. So there's that. But in terms of their opinions of where they think the hobby is and where it's going, and in terms of asset classes and all that stuff, O'Leary and Shine, for the spectrum that they play in, they're absolutely probably right. Like 50,000, 100,000, million-dollar cards are in the same boat as collecting Rolexes and stuff like that, right? Because these are in the high-end space. You can absolutely consider them asset classes. And then now you got Cage Lawyer, who's on the other spectrum, who probably speaks for the general public. And when he talks about selling my cards and, stuff like that, in terms of general public and base cards and Prism Silver, he's probably right. There's a bit of fear of like Junk Wax 2.0 and all that stuff sort of happening right now. So I don't disagree with a lot of the points that he mentions as well. It's just two completely different spectrums of quote unquote investors, right? So you got sort of the lower end, the main population speaking for what they think is going to happen to their ecosystem, and then you got the high-end sports card space, which is completely in its own ecosystem as well. So
I agree that it's really two perspectives, so I'm glad you guys mentioned that already. But I think some other points that Cage brings up in his YouTube videos is that if you look at what Fanatics is doing, they're releasing a lot of product, right? So when he says they're going to 10x the hobby, he thinks this means 10x to production. The more cars they print, the more cars they can sell. And of course, they do it in a way that's almost gambling in terms of the bounties and the chase. But at the same time, it's gambling is kind of like entertainment for a lot of people too, right? And DraftKings and FanDuel, like that's brought a lot of people into that space, like sports gambling. And I think that's just one way of bringing people into the hobby. That might not be for everyone, but that might be one. I think that is one quick way to bring a lot of people into the hobby, because there's so much crossover. If you're into sports gambling, or if you're, into that kind of thing, then this is just a natural step almost to get into sports card collecting or investing, right? So I don't see anything wrong with that, to tell you the truth, right? Like, I think even if a small percentage of those people that just come in purely for the entertainment value of ripping packs, of gambling, let's just call it what it is, maybe some of them really think that, this might be interesting to dive deeper into, and maybe they do become more of a sports card fan. Not everyone. I'm just saying a small percentage. And even if a small percentage does that, you're growing the hobby, maybe not 10xing it within a year or two, but I think that's a legitimate strategy to get people into the hobby space. But like you guys said too, I agree with Cage the Lawyer's points. Like, that's why, to tell you the truth, I liquidated 95% of my cards in the last two and a half years, because I'm like, the writing's kind of on the wall. The bubble's kind of burst a little bit.
And we've talked about that for the last 2 years.
Exactly. With the length of how much, we started this podcast, so like, is sports cards still a thing? it just looks a lot different now. We talk about the good old days of 2021 when everything, you can profit off pretty much anything, right? So it's just kind of this evolution of the industry. And I think, as it evolves, some people are seeing the opportunity in coming into the hobby. That's the Kevin O'Leary types. That's, some of the high-end collectors that see an opportunity. And then for those that are in it, maybe it takes longer for them to adjust with what the hobby has become, right? And I think you're not going to lose all those core collectors too. I don't think they're all going to go away. I think we all love collecting still, right? But, we are not just 100% collectors. We're not 100% investors. That's why there's a mix. And then we just do things differently. Like, I've liquidated all my cards, but I've also bought a couple of grail cards that I think are long-term holds,
right?
Because I think, it's not going to be maybe the 1952 Mickey Mantle, but it's definitely going to be worth more than, the slabs that I did have before, thinking, you know, if Yordan Alvarez or if Luis Robert does really well this season, that's going to go up. No, I had to kind of adjust my collecting and investing plans accordingly to how the market is reacting now. So, yeah. So I think that's kind of where we're at now. I wanted to ask you what your thoughts are also on, like, I kind of mentioned it right now, the whole idea that the hobby is becoming more of an entertainment, you know what I mean? In terms of, like, you know, Topps Hobby Rib Night is a case in point. Actually, Casey Lawyer mentions this. And he kind of does sound like a bit of a curmudgeon in this segment where he's like, oh, what's this Steve Aoki throwing cakes in people's faces? Yeah. You know, when he did Hobby Rib Night somewhere. Yeah. He doesn't get it, but I just, for me, I'm like, it's entertainment. It's bringing eyeballs to the hobby. For sure. And, you know? So what do you guys think about, like, that as a strategy to bring people in?
It happens everywhere. So for me, it's a standardized practice. It's called marketing. And it's social media. And you could pick the good and bad of social media, but I think we're more past that, arguing whether or not, you know, marketing a certain way is that's what we're arguing. The bottom line is, you know, I'm a certain type of collector/investor. I changed, we talked about this on our pod and how our strategy is going to change. And this is part of it, liquidating your slabs, putting it to more long-term, more sustainable kind of like investment pieces that will grow over time, because now we're going over like going more on the rarity side. I've been like that for the last year while Fanatics have been taken over, and it did not affect me one bit in terms of I was bothered by it. I was impacted it by any way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. And like you're saying, it's like, it's not for everybody. It's not for me. That's not my style. That's not why I'm in the hobby. And it's okay. Right? Some people, they don't have a collection, but I see them freaking entering breaks every day, you know, that's their style. Who am I to say that's right or wrong? Right. And that, I think that's part of the beauty of the hobby too, is like, do what you love to do at the end of the day. For me, it's sometimes scrolling on eBay, looking for good deals on sleepers, you know, and that chase becomes that kind of like reward. 'Cause when you find that and you know, you found a good, too good, like, to be true deal, and you commit to it, you see it as, you know what, this was a great investment. And, you know, that's my style, for instance, right? And it's totally different than any others. And it does not impact me whatsoever. If anything, it brings more attention to how rare my collection is and what people are looking for. People now know what a Pop One is, whereas before, people wouldn't even know what a Pop One. I have a few Pop One cards. And to me, it's like, you know, more eyes to it, the better it's going to be off in terms of the future of the card itself. So, yeah, I don't see anything that can affect me on that side that would change the way I would do things.
Yeah. I mean, Hyung's right. Like, when you look at marketing in general, marketing, you know, specific campaigns or targeted marketing, that's exactly what it is. It's targeted marketing. So the marketing of Topps now, Break Night, Steve Aoki's there, it's for a certain segment of, they're trying to capture a certain segment, whether it's an existing segment or new customers, new bloodline into the hobby. It's clearly the marketing is not for older guys that are in the hobby that just love collecting. Clearly the marketing is not for that, right? Like, it's not for those people, because those people are already in the hobby. They're sent, like Cage Lawyer, he's going to sell his cards and he's going to, whatever he's going to do, his strategy or what he wants to do with his collection is not going to change at all because of the Topps marketing. The Topps marketing is for people, right? So I think, you know, we can make fun of a lot of Fanatics marketing, you know, commercials. We can say it's lame or whatever event that they held, we thought it was pretty stupid. We can give our critique, but ultimately for their business, they're going to come back and be like, yeah, this is great. You can critique me all you want, but this stuff wasn't for you guys. Like this was for
right.
the 15-year-olds and, you know, and the 20-year-olds or whatever it was. Right. So I think it's fine.
Yeah. I don't think it's a secret on this podcast, at least, how we are big fans, generally speaking, of the marketing that Fanatics has done since they came into the hobby. You know, there's been hits and misses, but for the most part, it's been great. And even when I talked with Coach Ko last week, you know, he thinks Fanatics has done a phenomenal job with the marketing and just bringing people into the hobby. You can't argue that they haven't done that, right?
Talk about the bubblegum? The bubblegum cards?
Oh, that's no, we did. We did it.
Talk about marketing, man. I thought that was great.
You like it, eh? the bubblegum slab?
I do. I do like it.
I think we're going to talk about then all this controversy happened, so that was on the back burner. I got to look at it again. I'm not 100% sold on it.
I do know like what John is talking about in terms of like from a marketing standpoint. I don't think it's a bad idea. They didn't even market it. That's the beauty of it. Like it's kind of like what? Like right. And then you know what I mean? So it becomes like a thing that attaches nostalgia of like bubblegum and cards with right. like something in the hobby. And to me, it's kind of like, yeah, maybe there's no direct marketing where it's just like A to B, but I think there is some cool crossover of what they're trying to do with that, right? So I don't mind those things at all. And they work. People talk about it and it's not nothing that was expected. It's not like they're marketing this like crazy. It's something right. that you stumble by. And this is part of the user experience that I think Fanatics is doing a really good job. They're up in the user experience without telling us that there are all these different things that are happening within the hobby. Right. So,
yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I love it. Maybe, you know, for me to close things off to close this segment off, because there's so many talking points these days in terms of what's happening in the hobby, like it's great for content creators, like our podcast. Like, you know, sometimes when I tell people that aren't in the hobby what we talk about on this podcast, they're like, what? How long can you actually talk about sports cards? And we're like, we've been doing it for 3 years.
Yeah, there's a lot more than you think. It's not just talking about sports cards either.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it's not even slowing down. It's actually picking up pace, right? So
we got more in the works.
More in the works, we're here to stay. All right. Great discussion. And we'll always monitor the state of the hobby because it's always interesting to see what new innovations are taking place. But I think it's fair to say we're all bullish on where the hobby's going. All right, let's go on to our next segment we call Over Under. Okay, this is a segment we've done before, and it's when I give you a dollar amount for a specific card, and you guys tell me what the last sold price was, if it was over that dollar amount that I just mentioned or under. All right, simple enough. Okay, this is going to be simple because the over-under number is the same for all five of these cards. Okay. All right, and that number is $4,000.
Okay,
so I'm going to list five cards. You tell me if it's over or under $4,000, the last sold amount. Let's start off with... I believe he's still the in hockey, the goal scoring leader, Austin Matthews, our boy. His 2016-17 SP Authentic Future Watch Auto, PSA 10. Of course, we know that's numbered to 999. Over under $4,000.
I'm going to say over.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm over too. I think I had it in my 1v1 not too long ago, and I'm pretty sure it was like at $6,000. So it's over for me.
All right, that's an easy one. Sold March 19th, so a couple of days before this recording, for $4,950.
Okay,
wow,
just under $5,000. So it's gone down since you last talked about it, John.
Maybe he was thinking Canadian.
were you looking at Slap Sharks consignment?
It's possible.
All right, here we go. The other goal scoring record we're looking at, Alexander Ovechkin. He is 49 away now. He scored two against the Leafs the other day. His 2005 SP Authentic Future Watch, right? Number to 999. BGS 9, 10 auto, sold earlier today for how much? You think it was over or under 4,000?
I'm going to say over. It has to be over. I think his Young Guns goes for like almost 4,000. I think under 4,000 is one of the more expensive Young Guns. So I think any SP Authentic Auto, especially, you know, the his years, there's no really great, like if you get a 9.5 on that, that's a really, really good grade and card on that card. So I'm going to say over four.
I did say BGS 9.
Yeah, BGS 9, yeah. Okay. I think a 9.5 would be like ridiculously expensive, right, like in the 10K plus.
Yeah.
Okay.
You guys know I've been in kind of monitoring prices for the Crosby Future Watch. Mm-hmm. And I know that his lower grade, like we're talking BGS 8s or 8.5s, I think they kind of go in the four grand range. So if the Crosby is in that range, I can only assume a BGS 9 Ovechkin is higher than that. So we're going to go higher.
All right. The answer is under 3,650.
Wow. That's a good buy.
I almost pulled the trigger. Oh, I almost pulled the trigger.
I would say that would be a good buy. Like that's, you're talking Young Guns PSA 10 price right there.
Yeah,
I would 100% have that over the Young Guns. There's no question.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. I don't even, let's not go there. I don't even.
Yeah.
Go on the Young Guns. That's another segment.
Let's get by.
All right.
Wow.
Okay. We talked about Shohei in Friday's episode. His 2018 Topps Chrome Auto Rookie BGS 9.5 10 Auto, the one that I had before I traded to DC. That card, okay? 2018 Topps Chrome Base Rookie Auto BGS 9.5. Sold yesterday. Over under 4,000.
Do you know if it was Min Gem or was there sub 10?
Ooh, good question.
Tough question. That might be my kicker.
Okay.
But PSA, I would say a PSA 9 would go for 3.5K. 3K, 3.5K.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I could be totally off, but that's what I would do, a PSA 9. A PSA 10 would be probably upwards.
Yeah.
The centering is 10, edges are 10, corners are 9.5, the surface is a 9.
Hmm.
Over.
Okay.
Wow. I used to own this. You guys know I used to own the Sapphire PSA 10. Mm-hmm. Roughly around the same time.
You did well in that.
I did. I feel like those two cars mirrored each other in value. Now, the Chrome Auto may have blossomed a lot more than Sapphire since, but because I don't think the Sapphire is over four grand right now, so I'm going to say under, because if it still holds true that they kind of mirror each other's prices, I'm going to say under.
Okay, so John says under, Hyung says over. The correct answer is over at $4,750.
Wow.
Sold yesterday.
Holy. Yeah.
There you go. All right, let's go stick with baseball. His former teammate, Mike Trout, his 2011 Topps Update Diamond Anniversary. You know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. His rookie card, PSA 10. $4,000. Over, under.
Oh boy.
I'm going to say under. I'm going to say between 35 and 4.
Okay. PSA 10 Diamond Anniversary.
I don't know if I dreamed this, but I feel like I did see the price recently and something in the 3,000 kind of rings a bell. So I'm going to go with Young. I'm going to go under.
All right. You definitely dreamed it because it sold for $4,300.
Wow.
So it's over in that instance.
that was good.
All right, one more. Let's go to basketball. He's in the MVP discussion. Repping Canada. You know who I'm talking about? SGA, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. It's 2018-19 Panini Prism rookie card. Blue Ice. Looks pretty sweet. Number to 99, of course. Mm. PSA 10. Over under 4,000.
Man, I'm going to say under, just because he was so criminally low that even though it might seem like it's going up like crazy, I think it's still relatively low even now compared to like Luka prices and stuff. So I'm going to say lower.
Okay. Yeah. I followed that card on my watch list for a little while. So I have a feeling that it is under, but I think I'm 0-4 in this segment. So it's time to go George Costanza and just go complete opposite of my instinct. So we're going to go over.
Well, you got to stick with your cut, man. It was under 3,800. Oh, God.
That is money.
Bad showing for Johnny this time around. Oh, man. That's... you know what? We'll do another round of this later to redeem yourself, to give you a chance at redemption. So don't feel too bad. Yeah, it was tricky because I purposely chose these because there's like a little over or under 4,000, yeah. You know? So there you go. Another segment of over under. All right, let's end off our show with our regular weekly segment we call Pick One. This is when all of us, we choose two cards and we debate.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously and 6-1 since that matters. And what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble. With exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Which one we would rather invest in? All right, so Hyung, do you want to start things off for us?
Sure thing. I'm going to go baseball and someone who I believe is criminally low. He's the second among all active war leaders right now, and that's Mookie Betts.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he's going to potentially have 100 war when it's all said and done. And I think when he leaves baseball, I think we're going to realize how consistently good he was. And I think he gets no hobby love. But since you guys are at least Clark loves, you know, first Bowman's, and that's one of his rare autos from his rookie season. His first Bowman Chrome in 2014, a base auto, and this was a True Gem Plus. Okay, so this was one subgrade 10, True Gem 9.5 auto 10, sold for, I want to say, I didn't have the price, but I would say about $11.50.
Okay.
I'm going to pair that up with his Topps Update Gold from the same year. So 24 Topps Update Gold out of 2014. A PSA 10 sold for $1,100. What would you pick? A Bowman First Chrome, Base Auto, True Gem Plus, or a PSA 10? Topps Update Gold numbered to 2014.
Do you happen to know the pop count on the gold?
I will get that for you.
So the Topps Update Gold is obviously paper.
Paper, yeah.
Versus first Bowman Chrome, yeah.
I'm going to say it's probably somewhere like in the 250 to...
It's probably not that many, somewhere, to be honest.
It is pop 163.
Hmm. That's the PSA 10?
PSA 10.
Topps Update Gold?
Yep.
I think, you know, we spoke about this many times, but baseball hobby logic has shifted. Like Bowman First is huge. But I still, for me, I still love like MLB. I still love like the traditional MLB rookie cards. It's not auto. I get it. And there's a big emphasis also on auto. But, I don't know. I like the, as much as the gold is boring and we hate on, you know, the aesthetic of the paper gold, I think that's far back enough that the pop count is pretty juicy. And I don't know. I think from a collection PC standpoint, I prefer the gold.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my choice.
You know, in our previous segment, we're talking about, you know, like how we have to change the way we collect according to the market, you know, and I'm beginning to think it applies here. Like, you know, even with like base autograph cards, and even if they are first Bowman, they are base, they're not numbered, and you know, the BGS 9.5, so it creates this almost manufactured scarcity because of the grading of the base card, right? So I'm gonna go with like cards that are numbered, so there's actual scarcity, you know, how much there are. And the Topps Update Gold, of course, numbered to the year it was released, 2014, I believe you said.
Yeah,
2014. So, and it's a PSA 10. That's a bonus, right? So I'm actually going to go for the Topps Gold Update.
Wow. I would never have thought.
Yes, Clark.
Interesting.
Let's do it.
All right. That's interesting. I was actually going the other way, guys. And
with the first Bowman,
yeah. Like I do like the gold. I think it's a great card. I think it's a great buy, even at this price, because I always compare it to Mike Trout cards and see how his Topps update to his Bowman Chrome did. There's a lot of similarities, I think, with Trout having autos really rare. In his rookie, same with Mookie Betts. There's really no autograph cards other than his Topps Heritage as well. So you have his real one autos or his Bowman Chrome autos. There's no Topps Chrome auto. I think that's also why the Topps Update and Topps Chrome is such a good card too for Mookie. He's one of those guys where he doesn't have a lot of rookie cards. So it's not a bad. I think there's not a lot of scarce Mookie, if that makes sense. So and the on-card auto is massive for me. If you look at 2014 Mookie Betts auto, there's the real one autos and Bowman Chromes, and for that it's kind of like that Soto. Why I like Soto cards so much? I think Mookie falls into that equation as well. That's why I want to bring that up, because I see a lot of parallels with Trout, and I would probably go with the Bowman Chrome Trout over the Topps Update Gold Trout PSA 10. So I would probably do the same with Mookie Betts as well.
Okay. I was thinking that comparison too with Mike Trout, because I do have the first Bowman Chrome.
Yeah.
And it's a base. And I'm like, would I trade that in for Topps? The only difference with Mike Trout is like the Bowman Chrome of his card is more iconic.
Right.
Than the one that Mookie
Betts. But his 2011 update is pretty iconic itself too. Like his that image of Trout, but then it's in a gold.
That's true. Yeah.
Right?
That's true.
Would you trade it in for the Diamond Anniversary?
That's 4K. They're around the same price, wouldn't they be?
I'm guessing they're kind of close.
Yeah, and I would say the Topps Update Gold Trout would be similar to a 9.5, maybe. 9.5 a Bowman Chrome Trout.
No, I'll stick with the Bowman Chrome Trout. I do agree that the Topps update is pretty iconic, but the Bowman Chrome is iconic too.
Yeah,
so all things considered equal, I'll stick with the Bowman Chrome.
We had him thinking for a second.
Now I'm confused, but yeah, no. That's a good one. All right, John, you got one?
So I think everybody knows, as a baseball collector, 52 Topps Mantle is the holy grail. I saw, and we've seen it, you know, the altered 52 Topps, especially the ones where, you know, a kid cut out the image. We've seen a couple of those.
Wild.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I think I saw one that was on sale. I don't know if it was, and I don't know if it sold already and how much it sold for, but I'm going to just guess in my mind what that might go for. Maybe I'm completely off. I feel like it would go for like $10,000 to $15,000. Am I off on that? But anyways, I'm going to put up that card, the super altered Mantle, where it's all cut up, versus a card that just sold. It's the 2018 Topps Chrome Shohei Ohtani Rookie Red Wave BGS 9.5. Gem Mint Plus, the Red Wave. It just sold a couple of days ago for just under $12,000.
That's the non-auto.
Non-auto, the one with his leg up.
Okay, like top, okay, yeah.
Topps Chrome Red Wave out of 5.
BGS 9.5. I want to see this mantle card.
I think there's
a mantle card you're talking about. Is, like, it's completely cut carved out, like around.
Yeah, yeah. His like silhouette is cut out.
Yeah, I remember seeing it, and then I thought it was pretty cool, but
yeah, I think there's there are enough Grail hunters that so many people just don't even care, like the fact that it's authentic.
Yeah, I'm trying to find an image, but I'll throw it up first. I think it's easy for me. I'm going Ohtani. Like, you had me at red. End of story. like out of 5, Ohtani numbered out of 5. That is insane.
Yeah,
like 12 grand. I you know, like long term, that might not be a bad play. And then I would definitely, just because I love the 52 Topps Mantle, I would want to get a proper one for that. But I do, like, it's close. Like, if let's just say I couldn't get any 52 Mantle, yeah, like, that's, like, Clark showing it right now. Like, that's, yeah, no, that's not, I want the real one. Give me the Red Wave Ohtani. Like, he didn't even, like, use a sharp razor to cut, like, even closer. Like,
I think my son submitted that one.
Jeez. Yeah, that's, I was thinking maybe it's like, okay, I could see an art, this is like a nice art piece, and it's like, nah, it's not gonna cut it. I'd rather the Red Wave Ohtani, and then I would I would get a real 52 Mantle, even if it was like authentic or like an altered or like, you know, a one PSA one at this point.
Oh man, you can't appreciate good art. This is pop art, man. You know, it's like a collage of Mickey Mantle. But I can't believe this sold for, this is in a old BGS BVG slab. So
did this one sell actually?
Yeah, March 5th. Yeah, this March for 7,200.
Oh, 7,000. Yeah. That's lower than I thought.
But still, I'm sure a PSA might have been worth more. But yeah, that's it's easy for me to show a Red Wave. This is ridiculous. I don't know how it sold for over 7,000. But I don't know. It. Okay, I don't even have anything to say.
You can't even justify it on the other side, right?
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like you can justify it. Like 7,000. I was hoping it was more of a comparison, so we don't have to get money involved. I was hoping it was like more of a $10,000 sale. You know, Hyung's right. If that was not in the old school BVG, and it was like a PSA 1 or PSA altered authentic, I think it probably could have sold 8,000, 9,000. I'm guessing.
Yeah.
You know, assuming price is equal, so assuming the Red Wave or whatever this Ohtani card we want to pair it up against is a $7,000 card, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think I'm gonna go Mantle, man. And I think a lot of it has to do with what we just talked about today, like off in the hobby segment, hobby news segment, like Cage the Lawyer, what he's talking about, and like more people entering the hobby doesn't necessarily equate, you know. And I think as we go deeper now, people are going to continually be searching for rare cards. They're going to be breaking, chasing, and selling off and stuff like that. And Ohtani's in a weird space where everybody wants his cards, but his cards can, like, the ratio of what we knew, you know, back 3 years ago, this Red Wave would have been the shiz. Like, it would have been, it was huge, right? Topps Chrome, Red Wave, huge. But so much has shifted since, like, you know, the base Bowman auto or the you know, heritage real one autos. Like, people have been kind of diverting what was previously known as the classic Grail Ohtani. And I think the market is kind of getting confused because there's just so much options on, you know, if I have $10,000, if I have $5,000, if I have $15,000, what is the best Ohtani I can get? And there's just a wide range of opinions. Whereas the mantle, I think as we continue to go forward, it's just going to be an artifact. It's going to be a piece of history. Everybody's going to want a piece of history. This is the reason why a cut-up mantle still sells for thousands of dollars, because people still want it. They want a piece of history. And it's just going to be a continual, singular-focused grail. So I think there is... I'm going to pick the mantle. And personally, in my collection, I think it would be cool. At the same time, I might be like, this is so ugly. I don't like looking at it every day.
So therefore, but, he's going with that.
But yeah, I'm gonna say it. I think I'm gonna stick with the mantle and make the argument that there is a good argument for the mantle.
That's so crazy, dude. That is. To each their own. I think Johnny actually believes that Shani's got a gambling problem. That's why he's deciding.
Yeah, he has some inside scoop. He's probably dumping. He's dumping Otani.
Tell us, man. Anyway. All right. We're joking off the air that Johnny and I weren't really prepared for the 1v1 because we were like scrambling.
We were scrambling.
As we can tell from Johnny's but I was scrambling too. So this is my kind of like, I just found one right now. Okay, so we talked about the SGA Blue Ice number to 99 PSA 10, sold for $3,800, just under $4,000. Would you want four of those? Okay, so about $16,000-$17,000 invested in four PSA 10 SGA Blue Ice, or we're talking about the Blue Ice of Luka, same year, right? It sold last month for, you know how much? PSA 10, also numbered to 99, of course. $17,000. Wow. Okay, so just one of those or four SGAs.
Am I insane that I'm like leaning towards Luka? The logical me says the four SGAs, but it's kind of like real estate. I always say this with real estate, like good real estate's just good real estate, like the prime. And
right.
I feel like that's the Luka Blue Ice is one of those kind of grails, the staples, the most desired kind of like card. So it's tough because the price I don't like, but as a like a prized possession that it's like, wow, you have one of the grails. This is a card that, you know, any collector, high-end collector would be like, this is a must-have, right? Especially if you're a Luka collector. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy that I'm saying this, but yeah, I think I'm going to go with the Luka still. I think my, like, even if I spend that money, I'm okay with it just staying in there because I just believe that's the type of hype Luka is going to bring. In terms of his career. So, and yep. Dallas is looking really good. Like, I think there's a lot of, you know, positives coming out of this. I think Luka's going to eventually win a championship. So, yeah, it's, I'm going to go in Luka Blue Ice, 17K insanity, but not, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, it makes sense. Man, the 2018 Blue Ice is a beautiful, aesthetically pleasing, a beautiful card. It's very similar to the, the baseball Sapphire from 2018, right?
Yeah.
Not 2018 True. Sapphire for baseball. I think it's on another level, but you get what I'm saying. And, you know, technically, they're both for SGA and for Luka. Some people say it's color match, although not the right shade of blue, but still it's still blue. And I think I'm with Young. I think, you know, when you get into the like five-figure stratosphere, because if you're going to invest in the SGAs, we all love SGA. We're Canadians, and you know, the bias is there. SGA still has to do more. As he's going to be the underrated superstar, and I don't know if he'll ever surpass like a Luka or Giannis, or these automatic, you know, no matter how good or bad or not, you know, championships they win or don't win. I feel like there's a select few people that are maybe some people might say unfairly, just automatically in the top three conversation for like top three, top five every year.
Yeah.
And Luka is one of those guys. And I think SGA, when you think of big game hunting, like you have to think, is his $4,000 card going to go to 8,000? Is it going to go to 10,000? Is it going to 11? You're getting into the stratosphere of like big game hunters, like people who spend big money on sports cards. And I don't know if big people like that, unless you're a basketball fan, like a real basketball fan, you know, at $10,000, you're probably going to be looking at Luka. You're going to be looking at Jordan. You're going to be looking at Kobe. You're going to be looking at Messi. I'm not sure if SGA is in that conversation. So I think when you get into that kind of money, the liquidity portion of the SGA is probably a bit easier. You can sell some, you can keep some, yada, yada, yada. But I think the Luka at 16, 15,000, 17,000, that's a card that I think in the right environment could sell for 25, 30, you know, be an absolute big card. If you held onto it for 10, 15, 20 years, I think that is a really, really legitimate big card. So I'm also going to pick the Luka. And yeah, I'm also going to pick the Luka.
Okay. Oh man, maybe we're just all crazy because I'm going to go with the Luka as well.
I knew it.
For 70K. Oh man, but I was just looking at historical trends. So in 2021, during the hobby hype, that Luka Blue Ice number to 99 PSA 10 sold for about $105,000.
Wow.
Right, and now it's down to 16K. It's kind of, the last three sales has been hovering around 16, 17K. So it looks like that's the bottom right now. But I could see it spiking up, especially if the Mavs make a deep playoff run and Luka's having an amazing season this year again.
Right.
And he is the face of, one of the faces of the NBA. So he's got that going for him. And I agree with you. Shea is just undervalued in general. And I looked at his prices in 2021. It was $3,000. So it went from $3,000 to $3,800 in that same time span that Luka went from 105,000 down to 16,000, still worth a lot more right now, right? So it's one of those things. So I'm just investing in the player, Luka over Shea. You know, I would love to have a Shea in my personal collection. I wouldn't expect it to be an investment piece, you know, but it would be a great PC card, but nothing more, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So yeah. All right, that's another great episode of Cards to the Moon. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate you guys, and we hope you'll tell others about this podcast if you enjoyed it. And we'll have a brand new one for you next week. Talk to you then. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to Cards to the Moon. We'd really appreciate you subscribing to our podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. And you can also connect with each of us on Instagram at @5cardguys, or you can follow Hyung at Integrity Sports Cards, or John at TradeU@Recess. You can also check us out at 5cardguys.com. Thanks again, and hope to connect soon.